This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we are slated to hear from deposed Southeast Louisiana Flood Protection Authority East Vice President John Berry. He was involved in a levee board that sued the oil and gas industry at his behest, and as a result, he has been released from his duties as a member of that board by the governor of Louisiana, Bobby Jindal. We'll talk with John Berry, the author of Rising Tide, about what he's doing now in response to his removal. Also, Joe Tragel, the veteran activist from Baton Rouge, on a major anti-discrimination ordinance that passed last night by the Shreveport City Council on a vote of 6-1. Will Baton Rouge replicate what Shreveport has done? Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. And Inkster's show at WRKF.org works if you'd like to reach us online. Our guest is John M. Berry, the author, historian, best known for his books, in particular, Rising Tide, the book about the Great Mississippi Flood of 1927. He's been on this show many times, including discussions about his books about the influenza pandemic of 1918 and the development of the modern form of the ideas of separation of church and state and individual liberty. And he most recently was on this program on August 1st of this year, talking about his activities with the Southeast Louisiana Flood Protection Authority East, the levee board responsible for protecting the New Orleans metro area on the east bank of the Mississippi River. In July, this group filed a historic lawsuit against ExxonMobil, BP, Shell, Chevron, and 94 other oil, gas, and pipeline companies for their role in destroying Louisiana's coast. As a result, John Berry caught the ire of Governor Bobby Jindal, and the governor immediately demanded that the levee board withdraw the lawsuit, and the action was not consistent with what the governor wished, and as a result, John Berry has been deposed as a member of this board. Good morning, John Berry.
Good morning, Jim Inkster.
Were you surprised that you were not invited back to the party?
No. We were a little surprised that the governor reacted as violently as he did to the lawsuit, because we gave Garrett Graves, his top coastal advisor, reports directly to him. We gave him 8 months' notice of what we were doing and gave him notice in between. And Garrett never indicated that the opposition would be nearly as extreme as it was. But nonetheless, I knew from the first moment we started thinking about the lawsuit, there would be a good chance that I wouldn't be reappointed to the board.
Shortly after you were on this show in August, as in August 1st, you went before a state legislative panel. That was, I understand, kind of an unpleasant encounter. What happened?
Well, everybody keeps talking about how I was beat up. I thought I had some counter punches. The thing is, nobody has criticized the substance of the lawsuit. And everyone, including the industry, concedes that the industry has destroyed a significant part of coastal Louisiana. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, in a study in which industry scientists participated, they're responsible for 36% of all the land loss. That's a lot. And people have said, really for political reasons, well, it doesn't fit with our plans. Well, those are political plans. The reality is, I support the master plan, which the state has developed. I was on the Coastal Protection Restoration Authority, which produced that plan. Of course, I've been replaced on that as well. But the master plan doesn't have any funding. And the purpose of the lawsuit was to fund the master plan in the area of the flood authority's jurisdiction. And, of course, you didn't mention it, but obviously you're well aware, since then, Jefferson and Plaquemine parishes have filed similar lawsuits, which dramatically has changed the political equation. St. Bernard just voted unanimously, the parish council, to hire the same lawyer who represents Jefferson and Plaquemine, and it seems quite certain St. Bernard will go forward and file a lawsuit. And frankly, there are other parishes that are seriously considering filing similar lawsuits. So what we had hoped would happen has happened. The cat, it's out. And suddenly what no politician could talk about before, the fact that the industry has destroyed a large part of Louisiana, they're now talking about it. And the only way you're going to fix the coast is to fund the master plan. And people keep talking about the federal government coming up with tens of billions of dollars to send down here. I mean, that's dreaming. It's not going to happen. So you either sit there and watch the coast simply disappear, melt into the ocean, or you do something about it. And the Flood Protection Authority decided we better start doing something about it, or we would not be able to protect the metropolitan area of New Orleans. People's lives would be in serious jeopardy. That's why we acted, and I believe the authority did the right thing. And we had some polling since we've been on, and that polling, which was 22 parishes from Tangipahoa, from St. Tammany through East Baton Rouge and all the way to Texas, basically the lower third of the state. And 74% of the people believe the state legislature should not intervene in the lawsuit. The governor and the industry both want the legislature to do something beginning next March, which will kill the lawsuit. But 74% to 21%, people in those parishes said no.
297-5633, if you'd like to join the conversation with John Barry, the fabulous writer, author of Rising Tide, and his name was not submitted to Governor Jindal for reappointment to the levee authority after the governor made it clear that John would not be chosen for because of his role in this lawsuit. How were you informed that you would not be back?
Well, I guess just the press release, basically, or statement by the governor made it crystal clear that he would not reappoint me. In a technical sense, on October 16th, I got a letter about 5 p.m. the day before a board meeting of October 17th. It was emailed with an attachment thanking me for my service and telling me that someone had been appointed in my place and that, incidentally, I was also removed from the CPRA.
Who signed the letter?
A name I didn't recognize.
Okay, so it was a bit of an impersonal goodbye to John Barry.
These things happen. Obviously, they're more important. The issue is a lot more important than whether or not the governor signed the letter or Gary Graves signed the letter or whatever.
And another member also got the boot, right?
Well, not exactly. Dave Barnes did not apply for reappointment. He was in St. Tammany. Tim Duty, the president of the authority, has not been reappointed, but he continues to serve because he served until replaced. The nominating committee sent two names up from St. Bernard Parish, and I don't think the governor likes the other name either, retired Judge David Garberty. So Tim continues to serve as president with sort of the sword hanging over his head.
877-217-5757, wherever you may be, for John Barry, who spends much of his time in New Orleans, also has a presence in the nation's capital, but he is a force to be reckoned with in Louisiana, and we'll talk about his efforts now that he is no longer a member of this levee authority. Lynn and Melrose, good morning, Lynn. You're on with John Barry.
Good morning, John and Jim. I strongly support, of course, the lawsuit, and and I think you have great, you're doing a great job, John. But there's a phenomenon I'd like to point out that you may be somewhat reluctant to bring up yourself, that I call the silence of the ecoland. There are three major national environmental groups and one local coastal environmental group that have been very silent on this thing. National Wildlife Federation, the Audubon Society, National Audubon, and Environmental Defense, and the Coalition to Restore Coastal Louisiana. None of them, as far as I know, have taken a position. They're very reluctant to do it, to say anything that would offend the governor, and I think they're missing a great opportunity. And I'd like to chide those groups into changing and coming and supporting the lawsuit.
John?
Well, I wish they would actively support it. Interestingly, Garrett actually went to them, Garrett Graves, the head coastal guy for the governor and the head of the CPRA. Garrett, I understand, went to them and tried to get them to denounce the lawsuit. So at least they didn't do that. We have had very strong support from the NRDC, the Natural Resource Defense Council. And we're talking to some of the other groups and hope that they will eventually come out and support. They haven't done that yet. I do want to make a couple of points unrelated to any question I've been asked yet. First, about the only credible reason given for opposing the lawsuit is that the industry is cooperating with levee districts and other entities right now in trying to do something, and that the lawsuit may kill that cooperation. First, the industry is doing some cooperating, and I think that's great. And that cooperation is worth millions of dollars. That's real money. I would hate to risk that. However, the liability statewide for the industry is in the tens of billions of dollars. So what the industry is effectively doing is buying people's opposition at 1/100th of a penny on the dollar of their liability, between 1/100th of a penny and 1/10th of a penny. That's what their actual contribution is compared to their real liability here. They didn't do all the damage. I'm the first one to say there are multiple causes. I've said it in every statement I've ever made. And long before this lawsuit, I was very active in talking about the multiple causes and in the dams on the upper Missouri River, which retain 100 million tons of sediment and so forth. But the industry did do a significant part of the damage, and all we are seeking is that they pay to repair the part that they caused. Another point I'd like to make is the governor and the industry have said they're going to try to kill the suit in the legislature. You stop and think about that. And Jim was kind enough to mention my books when I came on. And in the last book, one of the major figures in that book, the audience probably never heard of, Sir Edward Coke, but he was the greatest jurist in English history and Chief Justice of England. And almost exactly 400 years ago, he ruled from the bench, quote, "the house of everyone is as his castle," unquote, a saying that every American knows. And what he was saying was a great lord with an army was really no different before the law than the lowest commoner living in a hovel. What the industry and the governor are saying, they want the legislature to rewrite the law to kill the lawsuit. If you stop and think about it, whether you're for the lawsuit or against the lawsuit, you've got to realize what the industry is saying is we're above the law. We can do whatever we want. We can have the legislature change the law. And the governor is going along with that. And that is deeply foreign to everything in American life, really.
297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org. back in 90 seconds with John Barry. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. And we're visiting with John Barry, the author of Rising Tide and some other exceptional pieces of work about American life then and now. And he is very much in the now with his activities regarding coastal damage to Louisiana that the oil and gas industry has been a part of. I don't think there's any doubt about that. As John stated, it's just a matter of how much damage, but how much responsibility should this industry have as far as the restoration efforts that are ongoing? We'll talk with John about his latest moves since the removal of him by the governor from the Southeast Flood Protection Authority East. 297-5633 is your number. And Ann in the Garden District, you're on with John Barry. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning. I'm calling to find out how I can volunteer to help with Mr. Barry's magnificent efforts.
Well, thank you very much. I did form a couple of weeks ago. We're still brand new. A group called RestoreLouisianaNow.org. We do have a website. I'm meeting later today to get more organizational heft to it. That website is current. There's a donate tab. I'm not sure if we have an email sign-up list ready yet. But if it's not on the website now, it will be in a day or two. And we are trying to organize for this. There are other groups working with us, levees.org, Louisiana Bucket Brigade. General Russell Honoré started something he refers to as the Green Army, and they're gearing up. We definitely need your help. The legislature responds to polls, but they respond even more to personal direct contact from voters. And we're hoping to have a rally when the legislature opens in March. I think it's an important issue to the entire state, not just to the coast, but obviously the coast is threatened with disappearance.
John in Lafayette. Good morning, John. You're on with John Barry.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. I just tuned in. I may have missed this. Did you all talk about Garrett Graves, the state coastal protection man, making these statements about the Mr. Go? I don't know if this has been brought up or not. But if it is not...
No, we haven't talked about it. I'm not...
Okay,
obviously I'm familiar with the issue, but I don't know what particular comments you're referring to.
Cleanup or correction... It's $3 billion that the Corps of Engineers wants the state to put up.
Right. We haven't talked about it, but for the listeners, last week the state said that they were going to file a lawsuit against the Corps. The Corps has prepared a $3 billion restoration plan for the Mr. Go area and wants the state to cost share that. The state believes that it should be 100% federal responsibility according to existing law. I support the state on that. But I also point out that none of the money has been appropriated. Even if the state wins the lawsuit, you still have to get the money through the appropriations process in Congress. I think holding people accountable and responsible for damage that they did is the right thing to do. And that's exactly why I support that lawsuit. And it's also why I think the state should be supporting the lawsuits against the oil and gas industry. If you did something, if you're accountable for the damage, then I think you should pay to repair the part of the damage that you caused. In fact, I think on the Mr. Go issue, it's a tougher sell politically than on the oil and gas, because the Port of New Orleans and the state of Louisiana, against significant opposition locally in St. Bernard Parish, really demanded that Mr. Goh be built for economic development reasons. It never panned out for the economy. But, you know, it gets complicated. I do support the state on that action.
Trudy on College Drive. Trudy, good morning. Thank you, John. Trudy, you're on with John Barry.
Thank you. Thank you so much for taking my call. As we all know, when David aims his sling at a Goliath, he gets into deep trouble. And when you speak truth to power, you are punished. I admire this gentleman so much for the bravery that he did to take this stance. I'm not surprised at the governor's actions. And the oil companies believe that they are above the law. And they have ruined a lot of our state.
Your response, John?
Well, first, thank you very much. You know, it doesn't take a lot of bravery on my part. It really doesn't, because there's not much that they can do to me. There are actually some members on the board, the Southeast Louisiana Flood Protection Authority, at least one person has actually had to change jobs because of this, and another is under pressure on his job. Those guys have courage. But I had very little at risk because I write books for a living. I'm self-employed, so they can't really do anything to me other than not buying my next book. I do want to say I'm not against the industry. When I was young, I actually worked in the industry. For one of the defendants, as a matter of fact, and they even gave me an award, which I didn't keep. I don't know where it is. It's a long time ago, so if they ask for it back, I can't very well give it back.
Who was that?
But,
who was the...
Atlantic Richfield, ARCO. Long time ago.
You must know Lod Cook.
No, but recognize the name.
Barry in Mid-City. Barry, you're on with John Barry. Good morning.
Good morning. Just really appreciate Mr. Barry being on the show and so enjoyed reading Rising Tide.
On page
425, our author mentions that in addition, the levee system falls short of its design specifications and so forth. And you may have already talked about this when I missed it earlier in the show, but... it was so prescient what you wrote in Rising Tide about what the future might hold. And I just wonder if you could comment on the levee system particularly.
Well, the current system in Metro New Orleans is supposed to deliver so-called 100-year protection. Actually, the Flood Authority has done some studies looking at the storm surge modeling that the Corps did, and we are concerned, I say we, they, I'm no longer part of the we, they're concerned that some of that modeling was actually state-of-the-art at the time they've done it, but a lot of science has developed in that area in the several years since, 8 years since Katrina, and we are concerned that it's not now meet the 100-year standard in part of the system. But it still, even at that, is better than any protection that the area has had before.
What do you think will happen next, John? These suits, as you note, have been embraced by parishes, Jefferson and Plaquemine, St. Bernard.
Well, as I say, I think there'll be several more parishes filing in the next few months. I think that totally changed the political equation in the state legislature. The governor seems to be distinguishing between the Flood Protection Authority's lawsuit and the parishes, but that's a distinction without a difference. I mean, for example, they're saying, well, the parish attorneys are not working on a contingency. That's not, I mean, technically that's true, but they're actually also getting a percentage of the return of any recovery they get. And, in fact, it may exceed what the Flood Authority will be paying its attorneys. So, I mean, there's just no difference. And I think the legislature recognizes that. Certainly the industry recognizes that there's no difference. The industry has attacked the parish lawsuits with every bit the same vehemence that they've attacked the Flood Authority's lawsuit. But when we first filed, the authority was isolated politically. And had there been a vote in the legislature that day, I'm sure that that it would have the legislature would have done something to interfere with the lawsuit. It's a long time. A lot of things have changed in the last few months, and I think more will change in the next few months.
Let's try to slide in a caller or two in our remaining moments with John. Thomas on Lee Drive. Thomas, good morning. You're on with John Barry. Hi, Thomas.
Good morning. I have a comment and a question, Jim. This is an interesting program, and I wanted to congratulate Mr. Barry on the great book that he wrote. My question is, what's the next one going to be? And my comment is, I want to thank Mr. Barry for indicating the state's position in this situation. It seems like to me, in a certain sense, we're sort of talking about a bird in the hand is worth billions in the bush. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Well, thank you. For the first time in 23 years, I don't have a book contract. I'm devoting myself 100% to the lawsuit, at least until the legislature goes out in June. You know, I'm not a wealthy guy, and but, you know, I figure I have another 6 or 8 months I can pretty much devote to this. I think it's pretty important.
Randy in Mid-City says, do you think it's feasible for the levy district's lawsuit with enough public support to leverage a more systemic solution to funding coastal restoration and other state needs such as...
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, because I should have said something to that effect, and I have failed to do so far. You know, our goal was always that there would be a statewide solution. The damage from the industry in the jurisdiction in the east bank of the Mississippi River is significantly less than it is pretty much anywhere else along the coast. The authority could only sue for its own jurisdiction. Legally, it had no standing elsewhere. But what we always hoped was that the industry would come to the table and come up with a statewide solution to the problem. I have repeatedly said that the governor has been a good governor for the coast, and what I would hope would be that he would become a great governor for the coast and bring the industry to the table, cut a deal, and in return there are numerous things the industry would like from the legislature, which I personally would be happy to support, and I think something could be done. It's in the industry's own interest. Particularly as more and more parishes file suits, they will see it as in their interest, with or without the governor's leadership, to come to the table and work something out.
Well, thank you.
The liability is enormous.
Let's talk soon. Hope you have a good holiday. And this man who writes as well as anybody else, hopefully will write about this at some point. In 2005, the New York Public School Public Library named Rising Tide one of the 50 best books of all kinds, fiction, nonfiction, and poetry in the preceding 50 years. So you've done Louisiana well.
Thank you very much, Jim. Always a pleasure coming on.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. And we're joined in studio by Joe Tragel, veteran activist who's been with us several times in the last several years, and there is a development. The Shreveport City Council last night passed an ordinance banning employment, housing, and public space discrimination against LGBT people. The Louisiana city, Shreveport, is the state's third largest, over 200,000 residents. The vote, 6-1. Joe Tragel, what do you think?
Good
Are
morning,
you happy?
Jim.
Are you happy, Joe?
Oh, of course. I'm happy for the people of Shreveport. Congratulations to all of the people who worked on that. Congratulations to their Chamber of Commerce, who was front and center on this issue in getting it passed with a vote to 6-1. Just for our listeners' sake, what is a fairness ordinance? If you ask me the question today here in Baton Rouge, can a person be fired because of they're gay? And the answer is yes, you can be. That's an unfortunate situation. Shouldn't be out there on the table as an option for someone who's intolerant or bigoted. But it is out there. So the ordinance in Shreveport says very simply that you cannot discriminate against people because of their race, religion, sexual orientation in employment, housing, and credit, which is a really very positive step forward for them and for our state.
Is Baton Rouge next?
Jim, that's a tough question. Let me just say this. I mean, I've been working on this for 16 years, and you just got a call from my good friend Rabbi Weinstein, and Chris Andrews and I were the three people who made a big push in 2008 to pass a non-binding resolution here in Baton Rouge, which was not supported by the Chamber of Commerce and failed, a non-binding resolution. And yet the city and the mayor have gone on seven canvas trips, Austin, Nashville, Raleigh, Durham, Portland, et cetera. Every one of those cities has a fairness ordinance. But when the chamber came back and the mayor came back and the city office holders, et cetera, came back, you never heard any discussion of this. We have a long, long way to go in the city. Here we are, 2013, Jim. And as we sit here today, I, as an openly gay businessman in the city, am not welcome as a guest speaker at the Baton Rouge Rotary Club. We have a long way to go. What is missing? I'll tell you what's missing. Leadership. Most of our people in this community, public officials, business leaders, they're caretakers. And they pander a lot to our worst things. Our city is much better than our past. And here's the bottom line. You want to be a great city? We need to begin to act like a great city.
Shreveport is recognized as an extremely conservative area. Although, like Baton Rouge, it has an African-American mayor.
Right.
The city has a large African-American population. And it has been, to some degree, the African-American public officials who have caused this ordinance not to pass. Are you going to work with them?
Well, of course we are and have been, and we've encouraged the mayor back in 2008 after we lost.
He was supportive, wasn't he?
He was very supportive the first time. The first time. Since 2008, I don't think you've heard much of anything from the mayor on this particular subject. And listen, the mayor's a politician. He's a politician, and he's a really good politician. Good politicians don't go walk out on the plank with nobody behind them. The mayor had who? Joe Tregel, Chris Andrews, Rabbi Weinstein? That's not it. Where were all the business leaders?
Isn't that enough to go to war?
No, indeed. Of course it's not. Where was the chamber? Where was all the business leaders? Where were the religious leaders? Where were the other politicians? They were nowhere to be seen. They ran to the corner, and they have continued to run. So here we are sitting here. Hopefully, last week we just received a ranking as the seventh worst U.S. city out of 291 surveyed by the human.
Where was Shreveport in that ranking, do you recall?
Shreveport was up in the 30s.
Okay, 297-5633. 877-217-5757. Joe Tregel with us. Last night, the Shreveport City Council voted 6-1 for an ordinance banning discrimination against gay people back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633, 877-217-5757, Inkstershow at WRKF.org. Shreveport, Louisiana, right in the heart of conservative America, not far from Oklahoma, where every county in the Sooner State went for Mitt Romney in the presidential election of 2012, not far from Texas, where a succession of conservative governors have been elected. No Democrat has carried Texas since Jimmy Carter in 1976 in a presidential election. And, of course, not far from Arkansas, which has been more receptive to Democratic candidates, but is certainly part of the conservative South. But last night in Shreveport, the vote was 6-1. The city council passed an ordinance banning employment, housing, and public space discrimination against LGBT people. Joe Tregel is saying Baton Rouge should follow suit. Now, I think John Delgado, who was on this show not so long ago, has stated that he will pursue something like this. Does he have the votes?
Oh, of course he does not have the votes. John, is a very good and bright breath of fresh air on the city council landscape for us. And for those who are listening, it's interesting when you use the term LGBT. Most people in Baton Rouge have never heard of that because we don't talk about...
I think
about
it's LGBT.
LGBT. Isn't it? We don't talk about things that are uncomfortable and are progressive and move the ball down the court. We like to just like keep going like we have been going. John Delgado is the same as the mayor. He's a good politician. But John Delgado and Chris Andrews and Rabbi Weinstein, Joe Tregel, Wendy Hirschman, and a bunch of other people who supported the One Baton Rouge resolution, we're not enough. He has to have leaders in the community. That's what got it passed in Shreveport, was the chamber, was public officials, business leaders, and religious leaders coming together in meetings, open meetings, discussing this. What are the pros and the cons? Why should we do this? Is it good for jobs? Of course it's good for jobs. Absolutely. When you look at the statistic in the last 40 years, our neighboring state of Texas grew 156%. We grew 14%.
Well, you've cited those figures many times on this show,
right,
Joe. Do you think it's discrimination against gay people that's caused this?
I don't think it. No, absolutely not. That's only one cog in the wheel of lack of.
You think it's symbolic of many other things?
It's a
maybe prejudice against women.
It's a systemic. Sure, it's a systemic set of issues here in our state. We're the fourth least educated state in the country, and the missing ingredient, Jim, in my humble opinion, is leadership. We don't have leadership. We have people who hold public office and are caretakers, or worse yet, panderers. I think we have the patent on pandering.
Well, where should the leadership come from? Should it come from the governor's office, from the U.S. senators?
Right here, right. Let's keep the conversation in Baton Rouge. It should come from the mayor. It should come from Adam Knapp at BRAC. It should come from Scott Chenevere, who's Pat Felder, who's the current chairman of BRAC. These are the people who need to call the meetings and say, let's talk about some of these. Let's talk about the fact that Baton Rouge is the number one city for AIDS in the United States. We need to do something about some of these issues. But we're always, you know, I listened to Gus Weil the other day, and Gus hit the nail on the head. We are completely void of indignation. Politicians can steal from us, run over from us, lie to us, jazz us around, take us on a trip and everything, and we don't have any indignation to say, stop it. We know better than that. We're good people. We are better than our past. And once again, you want to be a great city? Got to start acting like one.
297-5633 for Joe Tregel. Joe Tregel, Sunday in the New York Times, there was a op-ed piece you may have seen about gay people in America, gay men in particular, and the conclusion was that about 5% of the male population in the U.S. is gay, and that 5% is consistent in Mississippi, in California. Whether it's a conservative or liberal state, it's about 5%. Why do we have a case where gay people are better received, in your judgment and in others, in places like California than they are in places like Mississippi and Louisiana?
I think it goes back to this one statistic, Jim. Louisiana ranks number one in the United States. 86% of our population, we have 4.4 million people approximately now, 86% of our population was born here, raised here, never traveled more than a couple states away. So what happens is the garbage keeps going from one generation to the next generation. I was part of this. I grew up in Plaquemine Parish. I was taught that black people were the devil. Well, where did I get that from? I got it from the politicians. I got it from the church. I got it from, unfortunately, and I'm sorry to say this, from my family. But when I went away to school and everything, I began to think, well, let's see, do I have some God-given intelligence? Can I look at this question? Is this fair that we have this lens that we view African Americans? No, it's not fair. Again, the thing that is missing is the leaders who want to make us better. We are so void. It looks like a desert out there in terms of leaders.
All right, Dan in South Baton Rouge. Dan, you're on the air with Joe Tregel.
Joe, I don't know whether you remember me or not, but many years ago, when you were president, I think you were president of American Bank under Mr. Ousso, and you set up the state income tax, short form. But I'm interested in finding out. You have a grandson, a nephew, or a cousin, or something that lives in Zwolle.
That's correct. I have some, my wife's family's from Zwolle. Yes.
I don't know what that has to do with the topic at hand.
I'm at Kiwanis Club, and I met him and you, and I thought Zwolle was in Africa.
All right. No. Zwolle is in Louisiana.
In northwest Louisiana.
Z-W-O-L-L-E.
That's right. Named after a city in Holland, I believe, on the Salida Bend. Beautiful fishing.
All right.
Ooh.
Swede White writes, the fact is Mr. Tregel was calling business leaders prior to his talk at Rotary to ask them if they would adopt his non-discrimination policy so he could announce if they had or had not in front of the press at Rotary. Public intimidation is not a very good method to get people to listen to you and consider change. That's what Swede
says. That's what Swede can say, but that's absolutely false. The truth of the matter is that a number of the members of the Batteries Rotary Club, this was 9 years ago, wrote emails saying, we don't want those people speaking at our club. Now, they had to come up with some jazzy do to dodge that bullet. And, you know, that's part of politics. If you don't want to face an issue, you find some diversion or red herring. Absolutely not true. And as you well know, over the years, the attitudes in this city have not changed dramatically at all.
You spoke before the press club several years ago.
Oh, many, many times.
So how was that experience?
Well, it was great. It was welcoming. It was open. We had good dialogue. Actually, I've spoken to the Baton Rouge Rotary Club 4 times before. I was a member for 11 years.
But you weren't speaking about gay issues.
No, I would like to just adjust that. It's not a gay issue. It's a fairness issue.
Well, yeah, sure. I agree with you. But before, you were probably talking about economic development.
Yeah, or Catfish Town or being president of the bank or something. But the issue is simply this. Is a city willing to say to all of its citizens, in all of its public places and public spaces, we will treat every human being in this city with dignity and respect. We will include you in our organizations. BRAC, 60 board members. Any openly gay board members on that board? Nope.
But how would we know? If 5% of the male population is gay, and you got 60 members, that would tell me that 3 of those people are probably gay, Joe.
I will tell you how you will know. You will know when Adam Knapp, the president of the chamber and the chairman of the chamber, stand up in public on television and say, we are going to be an open and welcoming organization. We are going to welcome, seek out diversity to represent the people in our community. Right. We're going to take the step. That's the missing link, again, back to the leadership. We don't have it.
Hunt says you're not suggesting, are you, Joe, that Adam should out people who work for him and are on the board?
Well, of course not. But what Adam should be, he should be receptive and very public about being welcoming. Now, wait a minute. I want somebody to explain to me how you can go to 7 cities who have fairness ordinances. Okay, take 7 canvas trips and then come back and never say a word about openness or fairness. It obviously indicates a little something going on there that is not good.
I recall when President Clinton was advocating gays in the military,
right,
and ultimately split the baby with the don't ask, don't tell. He got what he could at the time. But he outed a guy who was the press secretary for the president, the previous president of the United States.
Right.
Is that kind of approach good?
No, I think that kind of approach is abhorrent. I don't advocate that at all. The approach that I and Chris Andrews and Rabbi Weinstein spoke, I think, very articulately for in 2008 and since then is one of open your arms. These are all God's children, and this is a city. Who are we to judge other people? I mean, I'm not asking people to invite gay people to dinner. I mean, I'm asking you in public places and in public spaces, respect human beings, and don't allow people to be fired because they're gay.
Well, if Shreveport can do it 6-1, why can't Baton Rouge do it?
Well, it's the same. We're plowing the same ground. We don't have any leaders. You don't hear the mayor talking about this. You don't hear the chamber talking about this.
Well, you just said you don't walk out on a plank by yourself if you're a politician.
Well, that's right.
So, but he has supported you in the past.
Oh,
and I think he's supportive now. He's just a good politician.
He is a good politician. The missing ingredient is the rest of the good people in Baton Rouge, the establishment people. What's missing is them standing up and saying, let's have a meeting. Let's talk about this. Let's do something positive. We're better than our past. We don't have to look in the rearview
mirror. But this city, Joe, is now, you talk about the Rotary Club and other clubs that are largely white. Now, the Rotary Club has many black members, to its credit. But this city is a majority African-American city.
Right.
So without support from African-Americans on this issue, it's unlikely it's going to be successful. So how can you get support from the black community?
I totally agree, Jim, with the premise that you just laid down. The way you can get support from the African-American community is by getting organizations like the Chamber, public office holders like the mayor, to call meetings, to have open discussion with these people about why a fairness ordinance is a good, positive thing for our city. We talk about wanting to be a great city. Got to act like a great city to get there. You can't just, the gap between our talk and walk is like the Grand Canyon. We do happy talk. We have the patent on happy talk here. We just talk happy, happy, happy. Things are going to be better. But let me give you a specific example. When I was chairman of the chamber back in the early 80s, the identical, and I'm telling you, I looked it up, identical list of issues with the school system in this parish was present then. We play small ball. We don't play big ball. We play small ball, and then we pat ourselves on the back for 2 years thinking we've done something great. We've got to leapfrog if we're going to get competitive in the marketplace.
Judy on airline. Judy, good morning. You're on with Joe.
Good morning. As the mother of an LGBT child, thank you for talking about this. In Baton Rouge, we seem to have to be dragged, kicking and screaming into the next century. And often people say, oh, it's Leviticus. You know, if a man lie with a man, he should be stoned. Well, they don't often follow the whole thing. In Louisiana, we're not supposed to be eating shellfish, so most of us would get stoned.
Well, of course, she makes the age-old point about the hypocrisy of many of the churches nationally and locally about, oh, the Bible says. The Bible also says we're supposed to be stoning adulterers. I know we have live at 5. I want to see a stoning at 7 on Sunday downtown for adulterers. If you're going to apply that standard, then apply it across the board. Don't apply it just to meet your personal prejudices.
Do you face personal prejudice on a daily basis, you personally?
Oh, no, not really. It's all indirect. I mean, I spent 20 years here as part of the good old boys, president of the banks, public official for Louisiana, and the difference between how I was treated in those 20 years and the last 20 years is really dramatic and very negative, and it shouldn't be that way. That's my point, is that we should come together and have some game plan and a fairness pool in the city that says everybody's welcome. You don't have to be white. You don't have to be straight. You don't have to belong to certain churches. Everybody's welcome in public places and public spaces.
All right. But on the whole, your life is pretty good.
Well, you know, that's not pretty good. I'm spoiled, Jim. We know that. We travel all the time. I have 3 beautiful grandchildren, 2 wonderful daughters, and a great immediate and big circle of family, and my Carrie Long and my great partner, and I've been together for 20 years. No, we have a good life. But there are a lot of people here who don't have a good life. I'll give you a specific example. Last fall in Spanish Town, 2 LSU students got egged after a game. Egged, head to toe, called queer and fag. They went to the Highland Road Police Department to file a complaint. What do you think happened? What do you think the attitude is of the Baton Rouge Police Department toward GLBT?
It varies, I'm sure.
Well, I can tell you what it was that night. It was, you've got to be kidding. We're busy.
All right.
Goodbye.
Okay. Well, Joe, thanks for your passion. And,
thank you, Jim, for having me. I appreciate it.
We have a mutual friend, Ann Edelman,
who was the
recipient of the Carl Castle answering machine message when she was at Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which was one of the great events in the city this year, and WRKF made it happen. And if you call Ann's number, this is what you hear these days from her answering machine.
You've reached the voicemail of Ann Edelman. Ann can't get to the phone, but she asked me, Carl Castle, international radio celebrity, and her close personal friend, to take a message. Now that I no longer report on world events for National Public Radio, I'm free to help Anne. That's just the way it is between us. So, at the tone, tell me, Carl Castle, what you'd like to pass along to my soulmate, Anne Edelman.
Anything you'd like to pass along, Joe?
That is one. I would like to pass along the suggestion that everybody call that number, because those who know her know that Anne Edelman is just a truly wonderful human being.
Yeah, one of the real treasures in this city.
Absolutely.
I think that's why I'm still in Baton Rouge. It's because of Anne Edelman.
There you go. That's why we're both here.
Thank you, Joe Tregel. And thank you for listening, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow for J.C. Kane. I'm Jim Engster. Have a good day and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.